for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello, this is The Thing About Cars. Welcome back. We are going to jump right in and continue our conversation with our friend
Leanne.
And at the table we have
Becca
and
Ben.
And I'm Mickey, and where were we? We were talking about, you said something last time that kind of want to revisit where, you know, getting the data in on the machine was something you had to relay to a driver who was trying to figure out how to brake 2 feet later than normal. And I'm thinking 2 feet later at speed. So we're talking a fraction of a second of a difference that this driver has to have an awareness of to do on a track with competitors in his face.
Yes. Understand that when you deal with telemetry, post, when the guys come off track, they head back to the haulers, and the engineers and the drivers sit inside the lounge. We call it that because they lounge around and do nothing. But they're looking at the telemetry, which is a map of the track, and it actually shows you every time you're on the throttle, off the throttle, on the brakes, and to what degree you were on that throttle and what to degree you were on those brakes. So you can actually put all of your corners together. And when you talk IndyCar or even NASCAR, you're talking about things in tenths of a second. You're not talking about a second. You're talking about a tenth here, you know, 2 tenths here. So, you know, when you look at a NASCAR grid sheet or an IndyCar grid sheet, the whole differential in the field might be a second, might be a second and a half. So, like as an example, at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you might have a guy running 220 miles an hour on a lap average, and you might have another going into 225, and you're thinking to the guy at 220, like, get the lead out.
Yeah.
But that's only 1 second on a 2.5 mile track, 1 second over the whole piece. So you're really talking about tenths. So when the guys are in there looking at all their different corners, the telemetry will actually put their perfect lap together. They'll say, well, they'll take all the times that you did all the corners as fast as you possibly could. So it'll give you what your ultimate, you know, utopia lap could be if you put together the perfect lap. And that's kind of your goal.
Sweet spots,
But look, there's a difference between good drivers and gifted drivers. And the gifted drivers, you know, I worked with a kid named Wayne Boyd. He's now an LMP2 for United Autosports over in the European sector. In fact, he's on the Asian tour. Gifted, because he could actually go and glance at telemetry, figure out where the trouble spots were, you know, okay, a little bit here, a little bit here, and he'll just go out and make the correction. Then there are guys that slave over it because they're the good drivers, and they're working over each and every, and they get so in their head at this point that sometimes they kind of miss it. Because the engineer at this point is trying to make sure the car is happy. And that's where the engineers miss it. You know, you have engineers that are so in tune as to what the data said. The problem is that they can only tell you what the car just did. The really great, you know, crew chiefs, guys that have been around the block can tell you what the car is going to do. Because suddenly the sun comes out of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and now you've got a different animal. And I've actually seen our guys go back and say, oh, the sun came out. Went through, made a change in tires because it was a differential back then. And made a little change, and we were the only people that went faster in qualifying when everybody backed up because nobody else made that change. So again, engineers are so dependent upon these laptops and the telemetry coming out of it. What you really want to tell them is like, get out of the lounge, go down to turn one, and go look at this corner coming through the car. You know, put your eyeballs on it and help the driver get out of their head too. Don't make it the living end. It's an assistance. It's a tool. It can be really, really useful, but it isn't everything. It ultimately, you have to make a car that makes your driver feel good, because when they feel good, they're fast. So you actually set the car for your driver, not the other way around.
I see.
I mean, you have drivers that like different setups. Ari Leindike likes his, like, a big old Cadillac floating down the road, and you know, Tony Stewart liked his really hard, and Buddy Lazier liked his always a little with a push. He didn't like it neutral, because then he knew where the car was. You have to actually make your driver comfortable. That's the key.
So you're saying possibly the process is now becoming too technology dependent.
I'm saying that you can't take the driver out of it, because while it's a team sport, you know, if the fastest jockey in the world isn't going to win if the horse dies. So, you know, it is a team sport, but part of that team is in knowing where your driver's head at, knowing how to make him comfortable, because he's the quarterback. He's the quarterback of the team.
So go ahead, Becca.
Sorry, I was just going to say, plus it's also a blend. You know, you can blend everything. There should be a way for me to expand on that, and my brain just went...
That's okay.
But between, a blend between everything, not just
Yeah, how all those elements work together.
Yes.
Well, if you ignore the driver, you might as well just be talking about drone racing.
Well, you could have automated autonomous cars racing for you then if it were pure.
Right.
Well, that's actually the big decision motorsports has in front of it.
Oh, no. Don't even.
Wait a minute.
No.
What?
No.
Really?
Look, let's face it. All of our sponsorship over the last how many years of motorsports, it's always been race on Sunday, sell on Monday, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So we're manufacturer dependent. Look, you don't have IndyCar if you don't have Honda and Chevy in the mix. There is no IndyCar. You have to have these manufacturers. There's no NASCAR if Toyota's not engaged, if, you know, Ford isn't engaged. You have to have these manufacturer support. So motorsports has always followed the path. So IndyCar went to new engines, you know, a couple of years back. What did they go to? They went to the, you know, the cylinder engines that was exactly what Honda is selling on the showroom floor today, right? So if they follow that trend, in another 5 years, you will not be able to buy, you know, a naturally aspirated or fuel-injected engine on the floor. You're only going to have to be able to buy a hybrid. That's where we're going. You're going to be at hybrids first, and then you're going to be electric. So if motorsports in general follows the path of taking the lead from the manufacturer, who's going to write a check to prove their wares on the track. That's what racing's always done. Very first race, Indianapolis Motor Speedway in 1911. It's called the Brickyard. It was a testing track for a reason. They raced them until they broke so they knew how to keep them running on the streets. So if you follow the path,
interesting,
that means motorsports then has to go to a hybrid engine. That means it has to go to an electric engine.
I'm so very impressed.
And then you've got
right
autonomous
now.
Drivers because that's what you're trying to prove on track. But, you know,
they create a new category. Leave them alone. Create a new
Well, it's a big decision.
And
it's
they don't always decision. Get the timing right, because I remember when Formula E began, all the gearheads and enthusiasts out there hated it. They said these
There's
cars
no
sound
noise.
Like vacuum cleaners, you know, yeah.
I mean, how do you go to a racetrack and not have any noise?
Right. That's wrong.
Someone give Becca a Kleenex, please.
I'm crying
on my laptop over here. I don't know what to do.
Well, and of course, quieter cars, whether they're electric or not, you know, mean that pedestrians have to look out more. I can recall one time when I was not quite paying enough attention and almost got run over by a car I didn't hear.
Yeah, but see, then they just go get the sounds out of Alonso's engine in F1
right.
and just pipe it through the Mustang.
Well, you know, they do have that.
Don't use the Mustang as the example.
And they do have that thing.
I did that just for you.
No, I'm going to have a twitch.
They do have that thing you can plug in your 12-volt socket inside your car that will sense the RPM and make an appropriately cool sporty sound inside your car.
I think that they should install
There's those. Even a version of it that has like V8 and V12 settings.
Yeah, but then some kids can actually decide they want it to play, you know, Def Leppard instead.
All right.
Rock on, Def Leppard.
Down the road they go.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Anyway, it's part of the conversation to be had.
See, I'm so bad, though. I mean, a little off topic. I have a white noise app that actually plays my Mustang idling for me because I recorded it.
That is so sweet. Mm.
So, you know, some people listen to hair dryers or washing machines.
Does your Mustang have a name?
Her name is Angel.
Angel, okay.
Mm-hmm. She earned it. Long story. She earned it. That just totally derailed
it. Totally derailed my brain. I think they should install, like, deer whistles except for humans. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
No, then we would hear screeching.
Actually, in Australia,
everyone.
It's called the hopper stopper.
The hopper stopper, yes.
And it actually works because kangaroos are smart enough to go away for a minute, where Georgia deer just go, what? What are you talking about?
Did you hear something? What was that noise?
Wham!
Right. Okay, so up on the board are a couple things. And first, before I get into our topic list on the board, I want to ask Leanne, what is your daily driver? We've talked about your collectibles, your hot rods.
I have a Mazda.
Okay.
I have a Mazda CX-5.
Okay.
I love a Mazda. I've actually worn a Mazda logo on my shirt longer than any other manufacturer in my racing career because we ran on the Mazda Road to Indy Ladder system for so long.
Very cool.
And so it's a Mazda.
It's
wonderful.
I knew there was something we liked about her.
Zoom, zoom. I used to do little pit reports behind the scenes,
zoom.
And I would write them in first person. This was when we were running Sam Schmidt.
Yeah.
And they were really talk about what's actually happening as opposed to some nice generic AP style and, you know, we got her done today kind of thing. And I always signed them, zoom, zoom. Yeah. So Mazda's been a part of my world for a long time.
And Mickey and I both have Mazdas that we talk about a lot, so.
Yeah. Yeah, mine's in the shop right now. And speaking of which, we'll do a quick update. I ordered a new transmission for it.
Or
a used transmission.
Yeah.
From, of all places, Minneapolis.
What's odd about that?
Was that the one you were talking to Ronnie about? Well, they were concerned about Northern.
Yeah, we were concerned about Northern and baggage and stuff like that. But this one was a rear-end collision, and the transmission looks like it cleaned up mostly okay. And
well, as long as it's sealed right, it would mostly be, what, the outer bell housing that would have any signs of salt.
As long as it lasts me for another year or two, I'm happy. So the final diagnosis was that, because I took it to a Christian Brothers shop, and it took them 4 days to even replicate the problem. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with the transmission.
So don't go to Christian Brothers.
They finally got the problem to replicate, and they said, you need a new transmission. I said, okay, fine. So I drove the car to a nearby specialty transmission shop, because Christian Brothers doesn't do that kind of heavy work. And the transmission guy says, well, it may be a particular valve. Let me drive it. And within hours, he came back and said, you need a new transmission.
And you know what? And this is a good place also to explain some of the gifted versus people who have learned with cars.
Right.
Similar, you were going out and you knew there was an issue, but these people couldn't replicate it, so they couldn't figure it out. With one of my cars, I knew something felt wrong.
Right.
I knew it. And I took it to actually a specialized Mustang shop. And they went through their rigmarole, and they kept saying, no, there's nothing wrong. And I was adamant, there is something wrong.
Right.
No, it's fine. It's checking out fine. 2 days later.
It blew up.
It was an AODE. I think it was a seal that started it.
Right.
Once you lose pressure in an AODE, it was, I think I ended up only losing second. But it's, if you know the cars, and it's more of an art, hands-on, you
I can't
that.
Tell you the number of shops I've been to where all they do is hook up an OBD reader, and if there's nothing present in codes, they think everything is fine.
Right.
And that AMCO commercial that says the majority of codes is transmission, no.
So in any case, so the whole story, because I don't think we've ever talked about this on the recording, it was I was driving home in stop-and-go traffic, and I heard this and felt this huge bang and lost fourth, fifth, and sixth gears. And it felt like they were trying to engage, and it felt like it just quite getting there. So I limped home in third gear, and that's when I had it, I took it to the Christian Brothers, and they couldn't get it, because the next morning everything worked fine. And then 3 days later, they got the car good and hot, and it dropped fourth, fifth, and sixth gears again. And took it to the other shop, and that guy tried his best to tell me that it was either electrics or a valve, and sure enough, I needed a new transmission. So he said a rebuilt one was going to cost like $4,300. After installation, I'm like, the car's not worth half that much at this point. And I said, well, how about if I get a used transmission and you install it? So he quoted me a price for that, and I found a $200 transmission in Minneapolis, and they're shipping it for another $175, which is the cheapest one I found online anywhere. And we'll see what happens. He may install it, and it may blow up again. Who knows? But
keep fingers crossed.
Exactly.
Let's hope not.
What is, Ben can't spell the word chicks.
What's up with that, Ben?
Gee, and I actually sometimes pretend to be a writer.
And that, this is his second attempt, and it's still.
C-H-I-C-S is.
We started with C-H-I-X.
Chicks.
So, either you're X in the chicks or what.
C-H-I-C-K-S. What's the topic about, Leanne? I think this one's yours.
We had, when we were at Brookhaven, we just talked about the fact that, there are a lot of girls in racing.
Yeah.
And people, actually, we seem like a statistical anomaly, but we're really not.
Mm-hmm. Guys still act shocked and what are you doing here? But we are.
I'm like, I'm sorry, the driver's butts are cute. No, that was sorry.
Not always.
Not always. But, for instance, Lynn St. James did this really cool thing. Everybody remembers Lynn St. James.
Yeah.
She was the second girl to run the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, mm-hmm. right after Janet Guthrie. Sorry, Lynn. she would do this wonderful luncheon, and it was celebrating women in speed.
Mm.
And she would bring up on stage not just herself, not just Janet, not just Sarah Fisher.
Yeah.
Just, Danica wasn't even the picture at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then Melanie Troxell. Melanie Troxell, NHRA, record holder, 320 miles per hour. Really fast chick. And so it was, these kind of known names, but she would start bringing up more and more girls. And there would be suddenly 30 on stage, and all of them had won a championship, had a record, and it was in karting, it was in sprint cars, it was in late models, it was just all over the map. And suddenly Lynn doesn't look so odd. because there's now 30 girls on stage that are all drivers. And this was, gosh, 20 years ago during my IndyCar stuff.
Right.
And so there's a lot there. But at the same time, at that point, there had only been 3 female engineers. There was, Rosie that was doing the Indy Lights stuff. She was the whole engineer for Dallara. And there's one gal that is now working for Ganassi. She's worked herself up. And then there was my friend Anita. I mean, there were like 3 females that had been in engineering. There's a gal in NHRA. She's actually a top tuner. But you're starting to count them on one hand and you use all your digits, and that's about it. But there are gals that can do the work, and they're slowly but surely starting to break through. There's still not a lot that have gone over the wall. To the best of my knowledge, Anita is still the only one that ever went over consistent. Mm-hmm. There have been some gals that have gone over on the, you know, the all-female pit crew kind of thing that does it for one race, which you just hate because it's just not right. It's like, if you earn the right, give us the job.
And, right, exactly.
And most of the gals that I got to know in the sport, Anita being one of them, Eloisa Garza, she was the first person to ever build an Indy car out of carbon fiber. She did so for Mr. Hall, and it was Johnny Rutherford's Chaparral car that won the 500. Eloisa stands at about 5'4". She was the second gal that was ever credentialed to be a crew member in the garage. Mm-hmm. Mind you, when they first came in, even though they had crew shirts on, they pretty much were asked to leave. I mean, there were guys that really harassed them, broke windshields, yelled at them, said they didn't belong here, they were taking a guy's job. And there were women who didn't want them in there too, because mind you, you couldn't even as a gal walk into the garage area and get the passenger car keys.
But you were also saying that was 20 years ago, like it was a long time ago.
That's
20
not that long
years ago was the turn of the century, pretty much, the new millennium. It's not that long ago.
It's not that
and
long
we're
ago.
Still facing challenges. It's
and I think it's just because a lot of, you know, you're inspired by what you see somebody like type do, right? Mm-hmm. So if other girls knew that there were actually female engineers, if there were girls on crews, the more you have, the more, you know, it comes along. I mean, I remember, again, at Sonoma, and all my friends were usually guys growing up. That's just all there was to it. That was the neighborhood. And even in high school, and while I did the sorority thing, it wasn't until I met Alexis Lyris that I really found a chick that I could relate to. Now, Alexis Lyris at the time was handling all of Bill Elliott's stuff. And she is in her mid-50s, and she's was a Greek woman. You do not mess with Alexis. But Alexis's first job was to be the PR director of NASCAR. And she was the first female to do that job. And when she took that job, women are not allowed in the garages. And she walked in like, what do you mean I can't go in here? It's my job. Mm-hmm. And so she was the first to do it in NASCAR. She was also the first to make it possible for at least drivers' wives to be able to come into the garage. That cute little story, she was getting them all signed up. Mm-hmm. And Dale Earnhardt, who hadn't married Teresa yet, this is senior, came over and said, but you know, I love her. Can't you give her the credential? She's like, no, it's too new of a program. I can't take a chance. And they were married shortly thereafter. I'm not saying the credential is what prompted it, because Dale was very dedicated to Teresa always. He was a wonderful guy. So, but she was this woman who not only had an amazing career, she had a husband, she had a kid. She really was the first to have it all. Yeah. And she really opened the doors for other gals to come through and do the work.
It kills me, though, that we still see stuff happening. Like I was watching something on what's now the Motor Trend Network, and this guy in the audience was speaking to the women who do All Girls Garage and says, you've inspired my daughter to do these things. And now this daughter is, you know, fabricating and building her own car and winning awards with it. And I thought, okay, on the one hand, that's really cool that kind of recognition is going on and that kind of inspiration is happening between women on the screen and women in real life in their own garages.
Yeah, but
on the other hand, wouldn't it be cool if it were so commonplace that there wouldn't be anything to
count? But you know where it starts?
Yeah.
It starts with the dads.
Sure.
So, like, my
dad, moms.
And I love my dad, okay? So, one of the greatest guys I'll ever know.
Yeah.
But in growing up, he wasn't going to teach me how to fix a bicycle tire because there was always going to be a guy around to do it. So now we have new dads that are a little more hip to it, and some of them have girls that are running go-karts. And the girls decided they didn't want, this true story, it was one of our crew chiefs on the Bilardi team, and his girls decided they really didn't want to drive, but they said, but Dad, we didn't want to tell you that because we wanted to still be able to go to the tar and wrench on them. Can we still wrench on the cars? And Dad was savvy enough to go, absolutely.
Yeah,
so when the guy's okay, when your girl, your daughter wants to come out and help you wrench on your car, say yes. It's okay. You know? Oil is an exfoliating thing. I mean, really, it's okay. And that, it starts with the dads and the moms saying it's okay for a gal deciding she wants to turn wrenches or play on cars. So for Pete's sake, guys, welcome your girls into the man cave.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I was growing up, I know there were women in the industry. I just never heard of them. I just grew up around cars, and that's how I got into it. I never really got to see someone to be a role model or inspire me, and that probably would have helped a lot more. I was the extra pair of hands that was always asked to catalog the car parts, and I was always hanging around when my dad or my cousins or my uncles or whoever was working on the cars.
My experience was completely different. You know, my mom was never expected to do any of those things, and she had no desire to do any of those things.
And you know what? If you don't desire, that's okay.
But I was the guy in the house who sort of forced certain tasks upon my sister, who did not want to learn any of those things. And I'm like, look, I don't expect you to have to, figure out how to do a tune-up, but at least change a tire, at least be able to open the engine and tell me the difference between a battery and an air filter. That's all.
Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. I said, those things. And she got mad at me when I asked her to do this, just as a point of pure education. When I actually got her car and I took the tire off and I said, now put it back on, she was furious with me. And I'm like, this is just pure self-sufficiency. This is the thing that feminism asks us all to be able to do for ourselves and for each other. And you're getting mad at me because I'm asking you to do it to your own car. Mm-hmm. And anyway, that's my sister.
People like that.
Probably shouldn't say that too loudly on the air.
Well, there are men like that that'll get just as angry if you try to teach them how to cook to take care of themselves. So.
Yeah, and then there's guys who don't know how to fix their own flat. And when you step in and do it for them as a girl, ooh.
Oh, yes. Oh, but it's fine. It's fine.
That's great.
Well, my dad taught me many things in both the kitchen and the garage. So
good for him.
I love him for it.
I sort of had to ask for that same education. And now we're completely off topic here and we're running out of time. But
didn't think you were actually going to stay on topic when you invited me today, did you?
That's why I wasn't too concerned about having anything on the board. We've had this interesting guest here and so many stories.
Right. Sorry. All right. So let's wrap this one up. This has been a really good time. Thanks, as always, for joining us on The Thing About Cars. We are recording, as always, at Strongbox West in Atlanta, Georgia. Please find our Patreon at patreon.com/thethingaboutcars. I believe that's the full length. Otherwise, our website remains thethingaboutcars.com. We definitely value your participation, your comments, your suggestions. And if you've got a question for us, please contact us. Send us an email or give us a shout on our Facebook page, and we can get you on Skype or involve you in many other ways. We look forward to hearing from you. In the meantime, be safe out there. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.